What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here.
Come with me if you want to live.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to 20th Century Geek. I'm your regular host, Scott Weatherly, and we are continuing the police story, and Jack is back. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying my time still. And this is an interesting one for us to discuss, I think, because we've had the hardcore kind of Hong Kong original. We've had the blurring of the Hong Kong and the Western in the sequel. And then it's where does it go next? Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a good one. And well, it's a double whammy, because not only is it sort of, I think, this is the first one that Jackie Chan is not directing. This is directed by Stanley Tong. But also, it's really introducing Michelle Yeoh as well to the series. So we're getting a female lead in this, and a very well-known and you know, fantastic sort of like action star in her own right. But what's interesting for me is we've noted how, I don't know, say elements of misogyny and sort of sexism appeared in the first couple of films, and how this one, I don't know, it would be interesting to talk about that. How does this address some of that? So yes, we are talking about Police Story 3, Super Cop. And I do want to just mention Stanley Tong, obviously, you know, we will be speaking about him again. He did First Strike. He did the stunt work on that. He was also, I believe, the director on Rumble in the Bronx. And then whilst he was in America doing Rumble in the Bronx, he stayed around and he directed Mr. Magoo.
Obviously, as you do.
Like, that's whilst you're here, yeah, direct First Strike for us, please, in 1996. And the next year, can you direct Leslie Nielsen in Mr. Magoo?
I guess I see the kind of pratfall-y, slapsticky, like skill set he can bring to it. I get it, yeah.
Maybe. I think, it'd be interesting. I've never seen it. But
me either, yeah.
It was just sort of, as I was going through his filmography, I was like, that's a bit of an odd tangent that he went on in 97. But yes, so Super Cop. This is an interesting one. Jackie Chan returned back as, this time is Kevin Chan. And he is identified as being the Super Cop that can take on this drug lord for Hong Kong in China. And in doing so, he is being sent undercover, and he'll be sort of guided by Inspector Jessica Yang, played by Michelle Yeoh, who also ends up going undercover with him as his sister. And then they take on the drug lords, and there's lots of fighting and sort of some amazing stunts towards the end. So let's start at the beginning. This is an interesting one. For two reasons. We said about how Western sort of we sort of felt the second was going, because it sort of teased an action sequence, then didn't get one, and there's all that kind of sort of this piece. This one, even more so, this one feels so different, and so sort of structured like a Hollywood action film. I would watch this. I'm always kind of surprised having watched the first two films. You watch this and you're like, oh, yeah, no, this one's kind of different. You're given up the whole setup with the drug lords and sort of thing. And then Jackie Chan gets what I would describe as, at least for this series, his first. Well, I don't know. He sort of got one in the second film, but like his hero entrance on the motorbike. And it goes from there. But what are your thoughts overall, and then sort of how this sort of begins?
Yeah, I think the title's fascinating, isn't it? Because you're right, Jackie Chan is the nominal super cop. But this does almost feel like a bit of a passing of the baton kind of movie. I do feel like Jackie Chan is willing, I use that word deliberately, like to take a bit of a step back. I agree with you, he gets a kind of a hero entrance and he's heralded as the one cop that we can send to get this mission done. Not really sure what he does on the mission. We'll get into that, I guess. But it's very much a kind of, it is a showcase for Michelle Yeoh, isn't it? I mean, obviously, she'd done a couple of movies before this. It wasn't her first, but I think it was, I guess, the movie which started to propel her, wasn't it? She hadn't done much for a couple of years, I think.
Yeah. This is almost like having, like, Jackie Chan's almost like giving his blessing or like his sort of like seal of approval of like, oh no, she's badass too. Like, I'll have her on set. So yeah, no, I agree. That's an interesting way of putting it, actually.
He just doesn't have that many action scenes, really. When he does, it tends to be gun-based rather than the only real fight scene I can think of is when he's in the camp with the rest of the Royal Chinese guards and Royal Chinese trainees.
Yeah.
That's the only one, really. Whereas Michelle Yeoh gets plenty, and rightly so, to show off all the abilities that she's got.
Yeah, that's a really good point. She gets a lot of the actual like kung fu fighting scenes, doesn't she? She's yeah, especially like in the village during the chase and at the end and that sort of thing. Like, you know, Jackie still gets some good stunts, and we'll talk about sort of some quality stunts. Yeah. But yeah, it's all very sort of I don't know. One of the funny things I find about this is we've said about, you know, I don't really know enough about Jackie Chan personally, but like he feels like he always senses like he's got this thing of wanting to share.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's got, you know, I'm assuming he has got a bit of an ego, but he's always willing to put himself in the sort of the line of fire and share the limelight. I think he gets this. There's like a team, as you say, that does all this stuff. And in this one, he's sort of giving Michelle Yeoh the chance to sort of, you know, to get the limelight, as you say. So it is interesting, that sort of, you know, how he sort of set up to be the super cop, but then is also there to be the more comedic element of it. Like, you know,
it definitely leans back into that more again, I think, compared to the second one. I think the second one we discussed, didn't we? It kind of becomes like a thriller again. It becomes, starts to lean back into that more 70s aesthetic. And we had that really excellent section in the middle, didn't we, with the second one with the team and the procedural chase. All of that's gone again. Now we're back to kind of silliness. A couple of moments of this one, I'm a bit tuned out. And they do tend to be around his physical comedy, which you know is a great strength of his. But yeah, I feel like this strikes a really weird balance. I'm not sure where this sits. You mentioned at the top, like that sense of like it does feel more Western. I completely agree with you. It feels like it is leaning almost a bit too far that way, I would say. And then it just drops in these kind of silly moments of comedy too, where, oh yeah, that's where we started. That's what it was to begin with.
Yeah, the balance of comedy and action on this one, there's times they get it just right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other times, I think, where it's not so much forced, but it's almost like they are under two different things. Like there's the action, comedy, action, and then comedy. Like they're not blended particularly well at times, but they both work individually. But like they're not, they seem a bit out of place. I kind of find that with Maggie Cheung playing Mei again.
Yeah,
she's back. I have a question in this because I actually sort of listened to the dub and the subtitles. I've now
subbed. Yeah, I did the same.
And I am not clear of their marital status by the end of this film, because at several points they call him his girlfriend, then they refer to him as a married man, and then they sort of say girlfriend, and then they refer to him as his wife. And I was just like, I'm really confused about what you know, this is a really bad dub if they can't even get that sort of consistent across the thing.
I agree, but actually I think that's 100% right. But I think even in the original subbed version, like the balance between what their relationship is pretty inconclusive.
Unclear. Because,
yeah, at the start they're really loved up, aren't they? And they're rolling around in bed and he's aware this is a dangerous mission, so he's trying to subtly give her like the key to the safe and the deeds and all this kind of stuff. That's a fun scene. That works really well, because she's like, what's going on? Clearly, you know, I know you well enough, Kevin, to know that something strange is going on. That works quite well. But then the next scene, he's gone off and he's meeting Michelle Yeoh's character. It's Jessica, isn't it? He's meeting Jessica and he's being all flirty with her. And he's trying to turn on that kind of James Bondian. We've had James Bond reference earlier, haven't we? That James Bondian kind of charm. So again, that's harkening back to that first one, isn't it? When he was meant to be in this committed relationship to Mei. But then as soon as
Mei's out of the picture.
Yeah, and the other woman's like doing the fake flirting with him. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm up for this. So it's not great for his character again here.
Yeah. Detective Kevin Chan is a little bit, you know, yeah, he's a little bit loose at times with his lady friends. No, I agree. But the thing with like May in the others, like May formed a part of the plot. Like she was in, you know, not was integral, but like she was important. That the relationship with her was important. This is the part where I'd say the introduction of you know, at the beginning, I'm fine with it because you say it's actually a good scene. I think it builds a relationship. It feels like, you know, they've progressed and settled down and all that kind of stuff. And now like you say it's quite fun when he's trying to sort of, he's like, no, it's just a training mission, but here's my will. Here's the safety. He's all given all that stuff. That works well. When she's brought back later, and the whole scene that just happens to be in the same hotel in the same city. The only comparison that seemed to spring to my mind for some reason was Police Academy. Like this feels like a Police Academy film all of a sudden. Like it's gone from being, it's leaning into the comedy and like going into the silly kind of like, you know, I'm having to hide from my girlfriend and with this other woman, you know, because we're undercover and all this other stuff and all the misunderstandings and all this other stuff felt very just silly, but like I say, just completely out of place in what had been built up in the plot. Someone said, oh, we've got to add in the obligatory May confusion, bring
Yeah,
her
and we need
back
to
in.
get her back in the plot because we need her to be the damsel in distress again.
Yeah, exactly. And
Yeah,
we will get around to the other piece of the plot. I just want to talk about that.
we'll
Because
work it
whilst
out.
we're talking about Maggie Cheung, she must have something in her contract that she has to bounce off a car in
Oh,
every film. Because
yeah.
when they drop her off the helicopter, that hit she takes on that car,
Yeah, it's impressive.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I see her, I'm like, oh, she's just playing silly. And then they do something like that. You know, they drop her from a helicopter and she hits a car, and you're like, yeah, okay, no, fine. Like Maggie Cheung, well done. Like, you know, you're earning your stripes in the Jackie Chan troupe. Yeah, but that thing of like just bringing her back to be the damsel in distress kind of feels cheap at the end. So yeah, but we'll get to that. So you see, we've got the super got Uncle. He's now Uncle Bill. So I'm never entirely sure. Are these supposed to be like the first two are direct sequels, as we said, and we love that because there was a direct sequel. This kind of feels more of a loose. Like it is a sequel, but I'm not entirely because May's in the same relationship. But it, like th things seem to have changed.
Yeah, there's a different captain, isn't there? And
Yeah.
he does seem to still be a beat cop, though, because there is that line, isn't there, about like, oh, he's out on patrol. So although he's the super cop of the title, he's not been put back into his detective status, it doesn't appear. So yeah, it isn't clear, is it? There does seem to be an odd time frame where nothing's really that clear. None
Yeah.
of his like colleagues are there anymore, and or if they
No,
are,
that.
they're not important to this plot, so we just don't get to see them.
Well, that's it. It's almost like the whole first sort of 10 minutes of the film are literally just sort of, well, we've got to get through it because we've got to give an excuse for Jackie Chan to be sent on this mission. So let's just get through it. And that's it, you know. And we need Uncle Bill because he's going to appear later on in, you know, in drag, which actually is kind of funny. But yeah, so that they do that, you know. So it feels very sort of obligatory, doesn't it? The first bit, we're like, okay, we've got to get through this because we need them later on. But I would say once this film gets going, and he does go to China, and he meets Jessica, the Inspector Jessica Yang, it really gets going then. Like that's I'm really pleased. I'm oh cool, and you know they have the thing with well, this is the other thing I thought was interesting. This is 1992. I believe, yeah, 92. And obviously, this is a Hong Kong film, which is a British territory. And you do get acknowledgement of that as well, because you've had like the British agents and stuff. However, what I thought was interesting, especially considering where we are in the world today, is how Red China is portrayed in this film. And not to say they're sort of, you know, they're overly portrayed as heroic anyway, but they're not. You know, now we sort of, you know, even around this time, like, you know, you could go watch, there'd be certain Bond films and other things where they'd be the enemy.
Yeah. It sort of hints it's going to do that at the start, doesn't it? But then never really takes that up. It sort of hints, you know, oh, do we have to work with these people? And there's that kind of commentary when all the big bosses are around the table meeting. But I wonder if, you know, if you're casting Michelle Yeoh and she's so lovely and charming, and if she's meant to be fronting who the group are, you've got no choice but to back off from that a little bit. And that there must have, you know, that's very, feels very deliberate.
Yeah, it does. And I don't mind it. I'm not complaining. You know, it's fine. It's sort of, it's, this is no different to, you know, other countries sort of lionizing other sort of allies or other countries and stuff. So no real problem with it. But I do like the sort of training school part, where she's sort of saying, you know, oh, you're supposed to be a super cop, and so let's see it. And she sort of puts him in front of this other guy, and they have to have a fight. And she's reeling off his accolades and award. You know, he's a fifth dan in this, and he's got this and this and this. And then they go have the fight and stuff. It's quite interesting. Again, like, you know, this is Jackie sort of like, you know, being humble, I suppose. Like, you know, he's not going to go, yeah, I'm going to kick this guy's ass. Like, they'll have a pretty squared up fight. It's quite good, actually.
Yeah, it's another chance for him to. We talked about it quite a bit, don't we? Like how he's willing to take those hits, and it's quite an even fight, and show off those different skills he's got. I really like that, because he first off lists like, I've done boxing and I've done judo and I've done this, hasn't he? And then she clearly knows it all already, because you're right. Then when she's referring back, it's like she already knew she was a fifth dan and this and a seventh dan and that. It's great.
Yeah.
Because she's done that twice now, because in that earlier scene when she's asking him to memorize all his new details and he can't do it because he's too busy trying to flirt with her and not taking things seriously. And then she already knows everything about him. It's brilliant. And I guess, but I didn't know if at that point whether they were trying to make some sort of commentary about his flippancy, because he's in this safe British, you know, empired Hong Kong. He doesn't have to take things seriously and work hard and graft. And I wondered if that was some sort of subtle comment going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it's more, it's quite possible. But I also think it's sort of, as we say, I think it's trying to return Jackie to the comedy sort of element. He's trying to be sort of, because you do get, what I would say is in this film, you get all the stunts, but you don't get the angry Inspector Chan that you've had in the last couple of films. And not that he's always angry, but as we said, like that end scene in the first one in the shopping mall, like is a guy out for sort of like, you know, to finish the mission. And you get a similar thing in the second film. It's very much a sort of a one man army against these guys. And it's sort of like, you know, you see that in the way he betrays it. This never gets to that intensity for his character. And this feels a little bit like, This is like Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon 4, you know. They're like, or even if we've got Lethal Weapon 3, we're like, okay, we've dropped the suicidal tendencies and the, you know, the sort of PTSD and the aggro. We're now much more into the sort of like, oh yeah, Mel Gibson sort of can be charming and funny and all this other stuff, you know, in the 90s and in the 80s and early 90s at least. It feels a bit like that they're going, like, oh, we're going to lean into this more, this type, you know, this thing that Jackie does now.
Yeah, he's kind of like mellowed and domesticated, I suppose, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder if there's kind of a meta thing going on here as well with, you know, we were talking about, like, as an actor, perhaps, as a performer, he's taking a bit of a backward step to allow Michelle Yeoh to go forwards. There's that kind of meta-ness at play with the actors and the characters too. Mm. The character's kind of taken a step back in order to allow the Jessica character to step forward. So kind of working on two different levels, isn't it?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a really good point. Yeah, like it feels, like you said, there's that handover, but also like Jackie's sort of shifting his stance on things, but also bringing in new people. Like, you know, come on, everyone else have a go at this. This is, you know, this is good fun. Who else wants to go? Yeah, and, you know, what you say about what does Jackie do on this mission? It's worth doing, or what does Inspector Chan do on this mission? I'm never entirely sure. Like you say, I ran through this in my head earlier, and I was thinking through like the events of the film, and I understand that the mission is to, there's a drug lord and they've got to bring him down, and you go, cool. And so the complexity of this plan
is
to place Jackie Chan in a position where he can help the main drug lord's brother break out of this forced labor camp. It's called Panther, so that he becomes trusted. And then, as a position, then they end up going back to, and they, by accident, they end up going back to the village he doesn't come from, the town he doesn't come from. And you know, build up this trust so that he can then be taken into the home of the main drug lord. But at no point am I like, I'm still unclear as like what the end of the, like, you know, they say, bring him down. And you go, is this an assassination mission? Were they supposed to get in and then kill him? Like, I don't really know.
No, it's a long way around as well, isn't it? Like, nothing.
Long way around.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure either, because again, like, the urgency at the start is placed, isn't it? It's like he's responsible for something like 90%. It's a high number, isn't it? Like, of all the drugs that are coming in. So we've got to get rid of this guy. And as you said, to be fair, once it kind of hits the ground running, it doesn't ever stop. It has good propulsion, this movie, but I don't think the story ever really matters. It doesn't really ever make any sense. We're kind of back to that first movie where it's just there to serve for the next scene. We want to have a cool escape from prison scene and a zip line. So let's do that. So how can we make a story around it? We want to have a cool scene on a boat within a boat. Well, how do we get there? And so I think that, yeah, the plot doesn't really matter, does it? It's just, how do we get to this next thing that we want to do?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I mean, it's a loose plot at best. And as a sort of like, whenever I see things like this in films where they're like, this is the plot to infiltrate the gang. And it's sort of like you have to become friends with the sort of like the younger brother of the main drug lord, which is a trope that we've seen a number of times. You sort of go, there's so much that could go wrong with this. This seems like the worst possible way of doing this, but okay.
And so much is taken on faith in this movie. Not just, you know, he helps Panther once and now he's his best mate. Mm. And later on, I know we're sort of jumping a bit, but when they're in the village and Jessica's talking to the police captain that comes to arrest them all when they realise they're the escapees, like, she just sort of says, well, this is who I am. And he's like, got any ID? No, but I am that person. Okay.
Yeah.
There's lots of little moments like that where things are just really... when they turn up to meet the main drug lord, like, I've got these guys with me, and he sort of tests them once. Great, now you're in the gang and you're two of the most important people in this gang. There's a lot of these little silly moments where you're just like,
hang on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hang on. Yeah.
It is a little bit convenient throughout. I don't know if you ever watched a thing called like a pitch meeting. There's a comedian on YouTube does this thing sort of like, you know, it's the pitch meeting to be sort of this, and he runs through the plot and he has a phrase which is then be like, oh, so they had this big problem. Well, that really must have tested them. Not really, barely an inconvenience. Like, that's what it's like. It's just, you know, everything sort of, it's good, but it feels like it's glossed over. However, I do think, like you say, that the once the action goes, it goes. The prison escape is great.
Yeah. It's so clever. Like, they're having to climb up where they take the coal trucks, aren't they? But so of course they shut off the coal trucks. So they're trying to climb up. And again, like, I don't know, maybe humble's the right word, but like that playfulness of like, well, this is really knacker, and it doesn't matter if you're Jackie Chan running up this really steep mountain, tires anybody out. I really like it. And they're getting knackered on the way up, and then the guards start up the trucks again, don't they? So they're catching up really quickly. It's a fun, playful little scene.
Yeah, this is that thing of like, they utilize, it feels like they've gone around this place and gone, cool, how could this work? What can we use? And they utilize the location like really, really well.
Yeah, you called that out in the factory in the last one, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it definitely feels like that's what they do. They go, oh, this is a cool location. Right, scout what we can use that's going to look cool. And you know, it's not so much this. Well, this was the first Jackie Chan film to have storyboards as well that Stanley Tong introduced, which I read about. But it still feels like they've gone, here's what we're going to do, but look at this thing over here. Like, that's cool. Let's use that. And so, yeah, I love that because it does feel that sort of spontaneity in the action at times when they're going around things. And yeah, however, like you say, this film, Panther, as a character, despite being a little daft and just trusting anybody, they do. I think they successfully make him feel at least, if not dangerous, then at least unstable or unreliable.
Yeah, he's quite manic in the decision he makes and the things he does. 100%. Yeah, he's that kind of chaotic, is maybe the right word. Yeah.
So you do, there is a tension throughout when you're sort of like, you're never entirely sure how he's going to approach things, which I really like, because they do, they break out and they get back to the sort of the base, I suppose, wherever it is on the waterfront. And there's a guy who sort of like, you messed up in the last deal, and he gets blamed, and he sort of takes him out and shoots him. And Jackie has to sort of stand there and watch him kill a guy, and without intervening, because he's got to get in, he has to get into the gang.
Yeah, when it gets brutal, this film doesn't shy away, and often it's in full view of undercover police officers who just have to, as you said, stand back and watch this stuff happen. Yeah.
Yeah, it happens a couple of times where
It
you're
does,
like,
yeah.
all right, cool. So yeah, but I do like this. There's this sort of, though you say, chaoticness to the character where you're not entirely sure. I think others recognize it because they're all a bit nervous about him being around as well. Like everyone sort of recognizes that Panther, they all like him because he gets stuff done and he'll get him, get them involved and stuff, but he's not, you know that, like, if you piss him off, like, you've pissed him off. Like, you're not
Yeah.
entirely sure how or when he's going to come for you, but he will.
It's sort of that. Oh, yay, great. Panther's back. It's oh, good.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is that sort of thing. And then this was the thing that kind of like made me chuckle, that they, he's undercover. And again, this is where the comedy comes in. And you say about the chaotic and the contrivances, because the next scene, they're like, oh, we need somewhere to hide out. We can't stay here. We have to hide out. Jackie, where are you from?
Yeah.
Let's go to the village that you're from, or the town that you're from. Fushan, or whatever it is that they said. And again, it's sort of like, he might have gone undercover, and this scenario has obviously not been considered. So he has to sort of then make up ways around it. How do they know that he's go they're go because he takes they go, it's this place, and they start sort of traveling there, and he's sort of making up excuses. Oh, well, it's all changed since I was here last. She went, only a year. It's only been gone a
Yeah, a
year.
lot more houses
Lots
now.
more houses.
Yeah.
It turns out that some kid runs out and says, Uncle Jackie, Uncle Jackie. And then it turns out, like, they're all there. Like, Jessica's there, Uncle Bill's there. Like, did I miss a drop line? Should they know?
If you did, I missed it twice too in both the subbed and the dubbed version.
Right,
Yeah,
okay, good.
it's the weakest section of the film for me. There's one part of this that I think works really well, which is when you get Michelle Yeoh and Jackie Chan on screen together. But other than that, I don't. This bit, I could quite easily fast forward through, and you wouldn't miss it, I don't think. And it doesn't really add anything to the plot. It's a silly sideways comedy sketch. It doesn't further the plot at all.
No, I mean, the only thing that this does, because you're right, the whole thing with like trying to find the house and his granny or his mother, and Uncle Bill being his in drag as his mother.
Which, like you said at the top, it's kind of, it is what it is, and it's fine. It's not derogatory, it's not rude, it's silly. It's just,
It's just Bill
yeah.
Tongue being kind of funny
Yeah.
with it. Like, it works. It's all fine, but like you say, it's not adding to the plot. The only thing I think that this helps with is when it all goes down, because later on it does all go down. They go there. There's a sort of, they end up having a fight and getting involved with the police in the town. As you said, like, because they're gonna, because they recognize Panther and some of his guys, and there's always they're an escapee. And Inspector Yang's just sort of like, don't arrest them, because I'm from, the Secret Service kind of thing. And like I said, they just seem to take her word for it.
Yeah.
They just go shrug and go, all right. But that whole conflict does sort of like, we said about how sort of he trusts him because of the things he's already done. This sort of reestablishes that reason to trust Jackie, because she talks to the captain as well and says, like, I'll mention these things. And he says about, you stole the money and did this. And
Yeah, it gives him like a backstory. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he sort of explains that, like, you stole from the football club and did this and that, and sort of like, so it gives Panther, like, oh, well, the police are after this guy as well, and he's brought us back here at the risk to his own safety. Mm. So he sort of like, you know, it sort of endears him to him more. But again, this, I think this is where we first get like a proper sort of dose of Michelle Yeoh in this fight. And
yeah,
she is
in the market. Yeah.
Out in the market. And she is so much. This is what, you know, this is probably the first, I went back because I think my introduction to Michelle Yeoh is much later. Like, you know, sort of.
Yeah, Tomorrow Never Dies, I think, was probably the first time I saw her.
Yeah, well, she's around the same time, actually. It's probably the next couple of years. Is it 94, 95, something like that? I don't know. Can't think of it. Maybe
so
even later.
GoldenEye is 95, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. So, yeah.
I think it must be like 97, 98, really.
So that'd be my first.
Yeah, me telling it's probably the first time I saw her.
Yeah, and I've seen her, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and that sort of thing later. And I've seen more recent stuff. So I sort of knew that she could do things, but then you watch this and you're like, oh no, she's a full-on, like, martial artist kind of star.
Because she's a dancer, isn't she? And I love that they really use that. Like, she does this really ridiculously, like, high kick.
Yeah.
Like, she can, like, basically kick a guy who stood behind her.
Yeah.
And obviously we know it's not CGI. It's not. It's almost like in an airplane movie, in a Naked Gun movie, it would be a joke that the character can bend their legs that far back. But Michelle Yeoh can just naturally do that. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. No, the whole fight sequences are great. They work really well. And one of the things I think, that the other thing this section kind of cements for me, as you sort of said, the screen, when they're on screen together, Jackie Chan and Michelle, they really do have chemistry. Like, they work really well together. And so, even though some of the comedy is a bit silly, there are other bits where, like, you know, they sort of work, bounce off each other kind of well.
The brother sister, when it's first established, is really good fun because she comes.
Yeah.
He's looking at the photo, isn't he? And he's saying, like, "Is this your wife? Like, she's really pretty." Jackie doesn't know what to say. Kevin doesn't know what to say.
Yeah,
and then she comes in. "Hi, I'm your sister." It's great. Yeah.
"Oh, the brother, how are you?" And he's like, "Oh, she's my sister."
He's like pinching her cheeks and slapping her, and she's hitting him back, and all that stuff's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is that thing where I think, although this is a bit of a side mission or a bit of a, and most of it's superfluous, I feel it does work from a character point of view because it does establish sort of like some of the links you're going to need to know or you need for later in the film.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it is good fun.
Why you take this little parochial village sister on this mission, I'm not sure. But they do. And we want her to go.
No, because she kills a guy. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. So after that fact, but the first part, they're at the house and it's like, let's go after dinner. And
Yeah, that bit makes no sense.
Yeah. And then she fakes the killing, doesn't she, of the cat.
She says she killed a guy. So yeah, she now needs to go on the run as well.
Yeah. But like Jackie gets quite beaten up, doesn't he? So we have the first fight in the restaurant and they're using tasers. He doesn't really do much. And then you're right. And then we're outside and Michelle Yeoh is kicking everybody's ass. It's another one of those like little signifiers to me that it's almost kind of a passing of the torch. Like, you know, this is what she can do, everybody. So let's watch her. You know what I can do. So let's watch her because, you know, she deserves her moment.
Yeah. Oh, no, 100%. Like, this is her showreel. This is the first time she has a real showreel.
I was going to say, have you seen Royal Warriors, which did come before this?
No, I haven't. That's part of this thing I said, this, you know, the Girls and Guns, her sort of, it's this Royal Warriors was done after Yes, Madam. So it was that. So I haven't seen it yet. It's on Eureka, have it on Blu-ray. So I will be
amazing. I hadn't. And then Dan was talking about it last year. My dad, when he went and saw it for the Forbidden Festival, I think. So after my Jackie Chan, I went back and watched it and it is.
Excellent.
Yeah, she's awesome in it. So I guess, you know, that's how she got this. But as you said, it was much lesser seen. It's not a Jackie Chan movie. So we know that, you know, that's going to get a wide audience. And this was that chance to push her out into the wider audience, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is her, like, breakout role, really. I think putting her in front. And that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it allows her to have a breakout role. Because I can, again, you know, we talk about comparisons to the West and stuff and other actors. Like, I can't believe there are many modern action stars that would be like, oh, we're bringing another person on and you know, they're going to get to do their own showreel in a, you know, in my movie. You know, and in all seriousness, I think, you know, when it comes to the stunts at the end, it's pretty, pretty evenly sort of, you know, so there's no like, okay, well, she can do this and this, but I get to do so and so and so and so. Like, yeah, it feels very evenly matched throughout. So yeah, no, it's interesting. Like, I don't think you get that very often. But it actually progresses. They go on the run, they go, and they say this is where they have, like, you know, the thing on the boat, and they have, again, Panther being a loose cannon, and they're using a speedboat to take out a bunch of sort of police as he's trying to get back to Hong Kong. Oh, Shanghai, is it Shanghai?
No, I think, yeah, I think on this point they're right back to Hong Kong, aren't
they?
Yeah,
they're back to Hong Kong. And so, yeah, so that's all fine. It's a bit weird. It the amount of engines on the back of that speedboat is a point. There's a point where you think, like, I don't think any more are going to do anything. Like,
and how it doesn't get blown up with all the police shooting. But, you know, we don't worry about that stuff, but, you know, that kind of true life physics. But, yeah, absolutely. But you're right, though. It ties back into what we've learned about his character before, because Kevin's like, no, what are you doing? Because he chooses to almost like play chicken, doesn't he, and run straight.
Well, he's like going after him. Like, he's going after him. Like, he's not just escaping. Like, he's literally sort of going, trying to mow down the police boats.
Laughing maniacally, isn't he?
Yeah.
All sorts, yeah.
And so, yeah, and he literally just runs over the boats and stuff, and it's all fine. And so, yeah, this is what I'm saying. So we've had, you know, a little earlier on, we had Panther step out and shoot a guy, like, unload a gun into a guy, and he fell into the sea. And we've had, like, some hijinks and some silliness and some sort of fun shoot. And now we're going to go to the main drug lord's house. And we are literally going to get a woman shooting up heroin.
Mm.
And you get to see the track marks and all kinds of, and I was just like, oh.
Being forced to shoot up, in fact, isn't it? The guy comes along and she's like, nah, I'm not in the mood. I don't want any.
Yeah,
more.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you are going to have it. Come on. This is going to be really good stuff. Yeah. It's hard. This section is brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. That bit was kind of like, because you go in the house and you see all these people sort of laying around and you realize, like, oh, this could. But yeah, that the drug taking scene, I was like, this is, because they see it. That's the thing. And it's a good that thing of, like, they watch it. And again, it's another thing where they're like, we can't intervene at this point. Like, we can't save this person or do anything. And so, yeah, they keep. It's not that. It's nothing too dramatic at this point, but they're really trying to hammer home, like, how bad these people are.
Yeah.
Because
they drown their lawyer, don't they, pretty much?
Yeah.
After this, and Jackie's on the balcony looking over. They've taken Jessica away to fit her for her bulletproof vest. For the mission, yeah. So Jackie's like looking over the balcony, isn't he? And they drag this lawyer down and drown him in the pool. So, yeah, there's pretty harsh stuff going on. And it's, as you said, they just got to sit back and watch it and allow it to happen, which is totally against their natural instincts.
Which should, to me, it feels like it should be building up to that intense one or two-man army kind of scene. Like, this should be, you know, building up to something like we've seen in the first two films. And that's almost what I'm expecting. I'm like, okay, there's been comedy, we're going to get something really intense. And we do, but not in the way that I'm expecting.
No, I get it. Yeah, I agree. It's this guy's so horrible. Like, he's such a villain that, you know, he needs to be taken out in the worst possible way. But I guess we get the stop off, don't we? We get the, like, we get the predator stop off in the jungle first to have a big shootout in there, and then it sort of never finds its way back from there. I think, yeah, I don't know why this scene. No, let me get my words out proper. I understand why they did this scene, as you said, to make this guy seem like the big bad. He's not just bringing drugs in, but look, just killing people indiscriminately without thinking about it. The woman overdoses, doesn't she? And he's like, well, go feed to the sharks. Let's not have any waste in this house. Like, let's go and feed the sharks. So I get that we're setting him up to be this terrible, awful person, but I agree it doesn't build up to a payoff for him, really, because they even when it comes to him, they lead into the comedy fighting and then the comedy interactions between them.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, it's fun because it's one of those weird ones because I am really enjoying this film. And I really enjoy it throughout. But there are moments when I'm like, I do notice that tonal thing where I'm like, this feels different. Or it doesn't feel like it should. Like my expectations aren't aligned with what I'm seeing on screen. And this comes to the comedy thing again, where you say about the big shootout, they go to this big meeting. And it's in the middle of the jungle, and it's like the generals are there, and there's some of the people there, like, you know, and it's all about, well, why did this thing happen? You know, why did this other deal go bad? And this guy, the big bad we know, sort of admits to it. And he says, yeah, I did it. And then he holds him, he pulls out a pad from this bulletproof vest, throws it out and shoots it. He says, loaded with dynamite, and if one of you shoots, we're all dead. Kind of thing, and it sort of erupts into this big gun battle. And I'm looking like some of it's really good.
It's a bit like The Crow when you've got all the guys in the meeting room there, and then Brandon Lee's Crow turns up and starts taking them all out. It's a bit like that, isn't it? Because there's just action all around. You don't know who's hitting who and who's going to survive. And
yeah, and I say, yeah, again, it's sort of like choreographed chaos throughout, and I think it works really well. And so there are scenes when you think, oh my God, this is crazy, because they all run out and it all blows up and there's a really good explosion and that sort of thing. And then the gun battle carries on. And then there's some well-done comedy and some out-of-place comedy. There's a bit that feels very Police Academy again, but the bit where, like, he's pushing her up and holding her up so that she can sort of, like, shoot and stuff.
Yeah.
I like all that. That works really well. And then she's like, let me down, and she sort of falls on him. And then he's trying to pull her in front because he's like, well, you've got a bulletproof vest on. No, I don't. And she's like,
oh, because
no,
he doesn't know, does he?
Yeah, because he doesn't know it's full of dynamite. And she's like, no, I can't get shot. And he's like, well, neither can I. All that is brilliant and stuff. Because she can't get out of this vest. Like, she's trapped inside it. She keeps trying to get out of it. She's trapped. But then they dive through that window. Or he dives through the window. And then the window sort of like the window cover falls, and she sort of hits the bamboo cover and falls to the floor. And that's it's the first time I'm like, oh, this feels, that's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit Mr. Magoo. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
And it's quickly followed by they jump into a room that's sort of their munitions room. And they sort of, then two of the guys threaten to come in that are chasing them, two soldiers, and they've got grenades. And like, Kevin's like, pretend to throw them. And as they sort of like, he goes, whoa! And then Jessica does throw it and it hits the falling thing again. And they look at each other and they're like, oh no! And it's like, oh, this is sort of the level, this is sort of, that's Police Academy level humor, which I'm not, I love the Police Academy films, don't get me wrong, but it feels like, I'm like, oh, this feels kind of like someone's gone, this would be funny.
Yeah. It's back to almost like spoofing itself again, isn't it? It's not quite finding that balance. And I think that was our chief criticism of the first one, really, wasn't it? That it didn't find that balance correctly. We had that overlong scene in the court.
Yeah.
And those kind of moments. You only really had that one in the second movie with the fart in the lift. Here, you're right. We're leaning back into those kind of cake in the face moments. So these kind of like really silly over the top.
Like, yeah.
And it's not, I think the joke of like throwing the grenade might have worked, but I love the way you put that. It's almost the, you know, you can hear a sound effect on a British sketch show as they look at each other like,
yeah.
It's that additional moment that pushes it a bit too far.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, like, you know, and I know I'll do this, but like one small thing would fix it. Like if a soldier ran in the other door and knocked her and then she threw it by accident, like, because it makes her look foolish. That's the thing. And that's the thing. Like, well, you haven't made her look foolish throughout. And now all of a sudden you've done two bits that have made her look silly.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then they never do it again. Like, she becomes the sort of the straight faced one again. And you're like, oh, they just seem to stand out. Even more so. Yeah.
And, but this, you know, she's massively talented at everything she does, but she isn't suited to that Chan-esque. She can do comedy, but not that kind of Chan-esque clowning comedy. Is not her forte.
Yeah, no, I agree. And but that's what you don't give for that. You're right. He's there to do that. Like she's there to be sort of like, you know,
so they needed to reverse that, didn't they? It needed to be her saying throw it, and then him and faking it, and then him throwing. Actually, they needed that, to reverse that.
If they'd have reversed that, that would have worked. Mm. That would have worked so much better. Yeah, that's a really good point. But even this has ingratiated him into the drug lords thing even more.
Yeah, because it looks like they've taken everyone out and blown everything up, doesn't it?
They're left standing. But Jackie sort of squares up to him. It turns out that it is a bulletproof vest and all that sort of thing. And then they have one final mission. And this is where, sort of, again, the film feels a little bit, like, segmented.
Mm.
Like, you know, they're just sort of like, oh, so what's the big thing that this person's going to do that we're trying to prevent? Like, as you said, like, at the beginning, they put on the stakes are he's 90% of the heroin coming into Southeast Asia is coming from this guy, and we need to stop him. And you go like, cool. Is there like a big shipment coming, or are we going to break up his supply lines? No, we're just generally going to hang around and just keep going with him to things where people get blown up.
Yeah.
But then it's sort of out of nowhere, something that I don't think I may have missed a line or something from the dub and the thingy. We then find out his wife is in court and about to be sent down. Or no, she gets sent down for whatever it is, and he's going to be executed. Seems kind of brutal, but yeah. Okay. And so it's a prison break. This is going to be, or a courthouse break is the final sort of section of the film. Did I miss a point? Is that ever mentioned? Because again, like, you don't know it until...
The first time I remember, now I'm thinking, they talk about it at the big conference, at the big drug law conference, don't they?
Yes.
They say that, oh, she's been arrested and she might give away our secrets. That's the first time I remember it mentioned, not any time before that. But he does talk earlier, maybe it's with the lawyer, he does talk earlier about the fact that she's got the codes, or she's got like the...
Right, okay, yes. That's what you're saying.
Know, she's got like the numbers in order to get into his account or something.
Yeah.
Okay. But again, it's never explicit, I don't think.
No, which is fine. Like, you know, maybe it's because I'm watching the dub version and trying to follow the subtitles. I'm kind of missing bits, maybe. But that's the thing. But before that, we get the return of May, and we get all the hijinks at the pool, and.
So she spots him, doesn't she? As you said, coincidence, we're at the same hotel because she's working as like a tour guide, I think.
Tour guide, yeah.
At this point, we're in Malaysia now, aren't we? We've gone to Malaysia. Mm. And part of their tour group is taking photographs, taking Polaroids, and he catches Kevin and Jessica in the Polaroid, doesn't he? So she gets to see it. And it's kind of cutesy, I guess. There's a couple, you know, the massage moment and the pushing in the pool. And
hiding his face in the sun lounger is kind of funny.
I think the May, Jessica, Kevin stuff works okay. But in the framing of with the gangsters and with Panther, and that's when it starts to
the bit with Panther, because it when it's you say it's to come meet you, isn't it? So it is. It's the sort of the inconvenience. It's the farce that you'd expect in certain comedies. Almost like a rom com or a sitcom kind of situation. But then you do have Panther going like, "Well, if you don't want it, I'll have it." And he just assumes she's a prostitute, and he's going like, "So how much, baby? How much?" And they're going like, "This feels really uncomfortable. Like this is really weird." So, yes, it's introduced, and then pushed to the side. Jackie Chan explains to May that he is on a secret mission, and all this other stuff, and it's sort of resolved, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, I think again, you know. You talk about, you know, not always trying to fix things, but I think there is a misstep here because there's a really nice moment where May gets a bit of agency. Mm. She helps him. Panther comes behind Kevin in the reception, and Kevin's about to give things away. So May sort of steps up and says, "No, I'm never going to sleep with you. You're not my type," or something, and slaps him and walks off. And then she's really proud that she's been able to help him. But in her pride, she gives it away to the other gangster guy who's in the lift. But I think that's a real shame that they gave her that moment of kind of agency of doing something that's useful and helpful,
contributing, and
whipped it away from her immediately.
Yeah. Poor Maggie Chung. She just sort of gets the rough end of this franchise every time.
She does.
But you're right. She does get sort of found out, but then they do go to do the The Break, The Prison Break, as it were. She's kind of good. I like the sort of the plan starts well. You know, it's all about distraction and, you know, the sort of the crash the thing, and Jackie's going, oh, there's chemicals. Mm. And all that. So all that kind of works for me.
Michelle Yeoh looks amazing in her, like, get-up. She looks completely unrecognisable.
Yeah.
She's just wearing, like, a long dress, and she's got, like, a headdress on. And yeah, it's a great disguise. She looks completely different.
Yeah, but, it's not exactly Heat. You know, this isn't sort of, a Michael Mann kind of, like, you know, run-and-gun kind of situation. But it's all good. It's all working fine. And then the fact that it then goes pear-shaped from that point is where we're leading to the finale.
Mm.
And this is where I'm like, oh, this is cool now. This whole finale section is insane. Yeah. And
it's like big stunt followed by bigger stunt followed by the biggest stunt followed by ridiculously followed by bonk. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It just sort of like keeps escalating, and you know, you've got fight scenes. So you get the fight on the roof. Again. Michelle Yeoh and all sort of stuff. But then you get like the car chase. possibly one of my favorite stunts in this. There are some amazing stunts, but there's the one where like Michelle Yeoh's on the side of the truck, clinging onto the roof, redoing the sort of the one from the first film. Like I was almost like, oh, if she gets ends up with an umbrella at some point, like that'd be amazing. But there's a bus coming, and she sort of flips up and does a handstand on the side of the truck whilst the bus is going past, and then sort of flips onto the bus. And I was just like, that.
Mm.
That's when you got one take at that.
Yeah, sure.
That was a one take job, and you nailed it. That was amazing. It's one of those. I don't want to be going like, this is amazing. This is amazing. I think, but
it is though, isn't it? And this is what Tarantino cites, isn't it? As the best action scene of all time, the best stunts of all time is this finale. But it's back. You know, we're repeating ourselves from our last two episodes. But it's the practical, the risk, it's the skill set, it's the teamwork that they're all putting together to get it right, and the design. You know, we were making light of it, but the design is very clever that it starts big already.
Oh, yeah.
But continues to rise and rise and rise and rise in terms of what they're doing, the risk they're putting people in, what it's involving. So here, I think this section where we've criticized it before, when really we were saying, you know, the Big Bad and Panther, they never really, they're chaotic and dangerous, but they never really pay off. It jumped into my head that it's kind of like Total Recall. You have like Richter and Cohagen. But you know, Richter does keep building until he gets his arm ripped off, and Cohagen does keep. But that's where we needed these two guys to go, didn't we?
Yeah.
But here this section works. Here they get this right. Like it builds up until we have this absolutely ridiculous top of a train, helicopters, all sorts involved.
It's worth just listening off, because I mean, it starts. Yeah. You know, there's things of
So it's the van first, isn't it?
It's the van first, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Because
then that ends with the crash, and she comes flying off onto the
red sports car.
Yeah.
Ironically, she smashes through the windscreen.
Mm.
And then that windscreen's back when they pull up to the next place, I noticed. That's almost a commando level inconsistency. But that whole bit of her just clinging on to that thing, I'm watching, I'm going like, is she tied on at any point? I'm going like, no, I don't think she is. Like, I think she's just holding on for dear life.
And as we get to see in the classic end credits, she comes flying off that. And the first time, I assume, they don't get it quite right. And she hits the side of the car and goes flying off into the road, doesn't she? So yeah, there's definitely no wires going on.
No, it's wince inducing. Like it really is incredible. But then, she does. She lands on the car and goes through the windscreen, and then they drive off, and then it sort of escalates up the building to the fight on the roof. And this fight, where there's again some of the comedy. This is actually the between Michelle and Jackie works. At one point, he's like, "I've dropped my gun," And she's like, pretend. And he's like, what? He's like, his two fingers up. And he's like, that's ridiculous. And they get spotted, but there's a whole fight. And she does a cartwheel over a guy to get his gun and stuff. That's something over Panther. So that fight all works. And the flips off that into the thing. There's a guy that, Jesus, there's a guy that gets flips. And he does a backflip. Jackie sort of pushes him. And he goes through a skylight. And you just see him fall through the skylight. And I'm like, I can't see a mat. Like,
Yeah,
that's
it's
high. So, as you said, the stunt team on this, earning their pay again.
true.
And then it gets to the helicopter, and I'm watching it, and because I'd forgotten some of this when I was watching this time, and he sees Jackie running across the roof, and you're thinking, oh, he's going to grab that before it goes. And then it's sort of there's a gap, and you just see him leap, and you just sort of, like, your stomach's in your mouth, going like,
Yeah.
if he'd have missed that, Jackie Chan would just fell off a building. That's
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because now we've, because we, as you said, we've got rid of the two kind of minions, haven't we? They're both gone. Panther and nameless dude. I'm not sure. It's, it has got a name. But, so it's Chibat and his wife now, isn't it? They're in the helicopter. You mentioned before, May's already been pushed out. She's sort of out of the picture
She's
now.
bounced off a Peugeot somewhere.
Yeah, she's on her way to hospital. Get those ribs checked out again. Yeah, and then he's just hanging off this rope ladder. And that is Jackie Chan hanging off that rope ladder from every possible angle, from as high as they can get it, running him into buildings, running him into signs. Yeah, it's
It
amazing.
is. Well, I wondered if, because it's an American sign, isn't it? It's about going to, like, is it about traveling to America or something? I was a bit like, is that a dig at something?
Yeah, that's nice because you mentioned before about the protector. One's a basketball, isn't it? You go smashing through a basketball and.
And I was like, oh, is this sort of like him, knocking off sort of like, Hollywood kind of thing? But yeah, like that's it's one of those silly things that you've seen it on other films. You'll have seen things that, oh, he's hanging off the struts of a helicopter or whatever, right? You go, but you know that they were like, but they'd have been clipped in and had
Yeah.
harnesses on and all that sort of stuff. So like, yeah, I've seen all that. That's fine, or like, other things. But this one, you're going, no, this is just Jackie Chan holding on to a rope ladder off the bottom of a helicopter flying over a city in Malaysia. Like, that's insane.
And you got like the first crank with Jason Statham, and he's dangling out of that helicopter. But like you say, he is clipped on, and they also digitally remove that. Now you got Cruise on that plane at the start of Ghost Protocol again, amazing stunt, but understandably so, clipped on. Safety first, right? Yeah, Jackie Chan, I just hang off it. I'll be all right.
Hang off first. I think that's his rule. Just go for it first. He then drops onto he well he's getting as he's going around the city. We then see Xiaoyou comes out, grabs a scrambler motorbike, and just tears off. And we'll talk about her stunt in a minute. Because I learned something today reading some of the notes on it that I was just like, oh, Jesus. So he go around, like you say, hit him off of buildings and sort of, and then eventually they drop him onto a train, and we get a beautiful Jackie Chan moment of him falling into a train
Oh,
car
it's great, yeah.
filled with cactuses or filled with cacti for no reason.
It's some, I don't know what it is yet. It's some sort of, is it a fruit? It's got like a spiky outside, isn't
Don't
it? Yeah.
know. It does look like a bunch of cacti, and I was just like, perfect, Jackie Chan. That's
And it's his face, it's
perfect.
like, ooh, that kind of, and because he's wearing white trousers as well. So for the rest of the movie, he's got like little blood spots on his white trousers and his bum. It's great, yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the Jackie Chan. That's the sort of the comedy. That's the clowning that I think is perfect. But then obviously you get the whole thing. Then the ladder gets stuck, and the helicopter comes down, and then the fighting begins. And he's just fighting a bunch of guys on top of this train. And again, this is a moving train, right? There's no CG, and the fights are really good.
Yeah, really fast paced, lots of like to and fro-ing and lots of you hit, I hit, not in that kind of it to equal it out way, but to show that this guy's a threat to Kevin. Yeah, absolutely.
And then out of nowhere, coming to save the day is Inspector Jessica Yang on a scrambler off a sort of a ramp to land it, land her bike on the train. And for a long time, I was like, this has to be set up. There's well, obviously is set up. I was like, oh, this is done, with sort of like some form of sort of like, you know, trickery.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, it's not. And if you watch the credits, you see other times when it didn't quite go to plan. And so it's incredible. The other thing I learned today is that Michelle Yeoh did not know how to ride a motorbike and before this filming, and
wow,
had to learn during filming in order for this stunt. And yeah, that just elevated it to me. I was just like, that's, you know, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that. That's great. That kind of makes sense though, doesn't it? She's just like, I'm getting stuck in, I'm doing everything, you know, and same as, you know, I'm going to come up to Jackie Chan's level. Anything you will let me do, stunts-wise, anything insurance-wise, if they even have insurance, I don't know, I'm going to do. So that makes perfect sense that she's willing to put herself through that and take those same risks.
Well, I found some out, so I double-checked it in the book, I Am Jackie Chan, today, because I saw a quote about it, and I actually went and read it. In it, he says that not only did she turn up, he describes, not only did she turn up to work, she turned up to beat me. And so they were trying to one-up each other on a number of stunts and stuff until he had to call quits.
Right,
it was like,
okay,
if we keep doing this, one of us is going to die. So we need to stop. But that's because to show you, like, you're right, she didn't just turn up to be like, oh, this is my big break. Like, she turned up and was like, I'm in a Jackie Chan film. I've got to come up, I'm coming up to play. Like, this is my big chance. So full respect for that. Like, I think that's...
Yeah.
And then they say, but then we get the fight on the top of the train, and Shaibot, I don't know how I feel about this, his ending.
There's sort of lots of toing and froing, isn't there? And it ends up with Jessica versus him, isn't it? Is it Shaibot?
Yeah.
Jessica versus him. And then Jackie, like you said, taking on the two goons. And then a bit of... not quite swapping over, but then, you know, Jack is stepping in, and see, there's that toing and froing, isn't there? Until the wife is dangling off the edge of the train car, isn't it? Jessica's instinct is to leap and save her, and then she's now dangling and is in trouble. So Kevin has to dive and hold on to her, doesn't he? That's where we're at, just leaving Shaibot by himself.
Yes.
By the helicopter.
And he's sort of laughing and thinks they're all vulnerable. And then they go through, because the helicopter's now crashed onto the train, and now he's got like a bit of burning wreckage, or partly a burning wreckage. And then they go through a train, a tunnel, sorry.
Yeah, because a couple of the signs have taken out the other guys, haven't they?
Yeah. Which seems to be sort of a trope now, like every, you know, same year, I think, 92, 93, Speed, and obviously he does the same thing with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, that would have been a different...
That would have been really... Yeah, he's talking about Hannibal Lecter. Dennis Hopper. And I think, you know, Wolverine does it later on in the Wolverine stuff. So I think it's become a bit of a trope. But beside the point, he's just then stood there and then just taken out by the burning wreckage of the helicopter, and Jackie Chan has to roll to avoid the burning wreckage. But that, I don't know, it just feels like kind of a cheat.
I agree. There's no... Yeah, you want him to have... It's violent, and it's a big death, I suppose, in terms of what was his getaway vehicle becomes his comeuppance. So I kind of get... I like that symmetry. But yeah, there's no, like, showdown, is there? There's no, like him and Jessica have a bit of a fight. But yeah, you're right. It feels like we need something a bit bigger. He needs to suffer in a way that he's been making other people suffer, yeah.
Or Jackie needs to have that one man army kind of thing to be sort of like we've seen in the other films. Like, he needs to, like the almost impossible stunt of some kind. Something happens. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. It just feels like a bit of a cheat at the end. But it's all fine. I'm not dissatisfied for everything else that's gone before it. I think it's been phenomenal. And that's sort of it. Yeah, we sort of, you know, it sort of, it takes us from there. But as we go through this finale, like, I do think, because I read some as well, what you said, that Tarantino sort of lauds this sort of finale as being, you know, one of, if not the best action sort of sequence. And I was keeping that in my head whilst I was thinking, like, where else has there been any others Western films and even sort of like Western action films that have had that construct, you know, well constructed elevation or escalation of action stuff. And it, there really isn't a great deal, like, you know, that do it. I think, at least not in the 90s. I think it was all, they were still in that sort of like the wham bam scenario. So, you know, the sort of the tail end of, or becoming the tail end of Arnie and Stallone and others. I don't think it's really until we get to like the late 90s. And like you say, you'll get like the Hong Kong influences becoming more proficient, I think, in Hollywood. You know, John Woo comes in and does a series.
Something like Face Off, probably.
I think Face Off was one I sort of landed on.
Yeah.
Was the kind of thing. I even thought.
Speedboats, Fight on the Beach.
Yeah. It's sort of, you know, it's sort of everything keeps going and going and going, sort of escalating. The only other one I thought about was Con Air, where I was just like, that film just sort of like the final third is just sort of like goes and goes and goes until you.
Yeah,
sort of
that's
like
a good point. Plane Crash in Vegas, Fire Engine. Yeah.
So there's a few, but.
And it's Mission Impossible now, really, isn't it? But I mean,
yes, that's what I was going to say.
We've spoken before about the Jackie Chan influence of Mission Impossible is very, very apparent.
Yes, oh, 100%. And I think that's sort of, you know, I don't think Tom Cruise would even deny that. I think he'd be like, no, of course, like 100%. Like, I owe so much to Jackie Chan.
The first Mission Impossible movie ends with a train and a helicopter.
Very good point, actually. Yeah.
In fact, today 96? I was watching it. 96,
yeah.
And today when I was watching it, I was obviously totally tuned in on this scene in the rewatch before we were talking tonight. And I even think, you know, where I'm reading it too much, but maybe some little musical cues that feel quite similar to
the score that's
in Mission Impossible.
Funny you say that. Throughout this film, and I think Mission Impossible may have been one of the things I thought about, but at what, there were several points and I was like, did I just hear the Batman 89 music? I even checked. I was like, did Danny Elfman write, like, sign off on something? There's a couple of notes where it's like, not so much the Batman theme, but you know, like the final fight in the church. And it's got some of that, some of the music from that. I was just like, this feels very much from that. So it's not, apparently not.
I mean, it happens a lot, doesn't it? Where they've used the temp music. But they often take it from other movies, don't they, in order to...
And it becomes similar and lots of the stuff.
Exactly. So when the composer hears it, you can't help. But yeah, I think it happens quite a bit.
Yeah. But I'm not going to knock him for it. It's a perfectly adequate score. But yeah, no, it's just interesting. Like you said, the influence of this. You know, the other thing to note that I read is the irony that this is probably the most Western-feeling one so far, I think.
Agreed, yeah.
Yet didn't get a US release for years. The first two did, and four, which we'll talk about in the next episode, First Strike, did. This one doesn't, and it sort of feels like this is the one that really could have been the one that launched Jackie and Michelle Yeoh in Hollywood. Like, this could have really been it. So it's an odd choice that this didn't get an international release. But yes. So yeah, really, that's it. So we sort of wrap up on that, and we get the usual stuff, and straight into the.
You get the classic. I think you said in the last for Police Story 2, you felt like you didn't get the kind of classic action movie ending.
Yeah,
you get it this time.
Yes.
You get them sat on the train, and she reveals the bank numbers in order for them to get the money, and you get that kind of like, haha, we're going to have it now, haha, we're going to have it. And well, Hong Kong and China will be united in 97 when the British give us back anyway. So you get that kind of little nice payoff that you were hoping for.
Yeah. And again, that feels very Western, but I like it. Yeah. And again, it works well because of the chemistry between Jackie Chan and Michelle Yeoh. I think they just work so well together in this. But yeah, then you get the stunts, the sort of the blooper reel, which is always worth watching. Just almost, I feel like I have to watch it almost out of respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're sort of like, yeah, we know a lot of people put like blood, sweat and tears into this. So I feel like I have to acknowledge that, and I'm going to sit through at least that part of the credits and watch it. Cause it's just so impressive. I just think it's worth noting. But yeah, that's it. I think it's an interesting film. I really enjoy it. I have to admit.
Me too. I really like it. I think it sits nicely in between the first two for me in terms of quality. I think,
yeah,
interestingly, despite that first one being so lauded, it's probably my least favorite of the three. Doesn't mean it's a bad movie. Just means if I had a choice to only watch one of these again, it wouldn't be the one I'd pick. Although I do agree with you, I think this one feels like it's perhaps leaning a little bit too West. Where it does that, you forgive everything because of Michelle Yeoh, quite simply. Every time she's on screen, it elevates everything. The chemistry she has with Jackie Chan is excellent. I think she just adds the element that was perhaps missing up until now. And it was exactly the right call to get her in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
This point is... in the franchise, in the run.
Yeah. This feels like a good buddy cop film. This is a really solid sort of buddy cop film, and I think that's where you know. In my head, I make comparisons to Lethal Weapon, and the other sort of that we've had in the 80s, and sort of we all get in the 90s. But this works, and I think it works because of the chemistry. I think because of the way the film's structured. I also think the ending works because you haven't had any major stunts beforehand. Because it doesn't open with anything, you sort of go, what am I going to get? What am I going to get? So when you get to the end and it does everything then, the payoff is really good. I think the structure works. I think, as we said, there's some odd little tangents and diversions, and some of the comedy is poorly chosen at times.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder, as we've talked about it, one thing that struck me is I wonder if there's a cultural barrier for some of that as well. We're just different, if it's different culture, different sense of humour.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they'd watch some of the films, British films, and be like, what is this crap? This is silly or not funny or whatever. There's always that cultural sort of what's funny here isn't funny there kind of thing.
Definitely. And you making that comparison to Lethal Weapon is really interesting. That it's, you're right, it's number three, isn't it? Where, things have taken a turn. Now we're funny, and Riggs is going to meet Rene Russo's character and settle down, and he's going to eat an onion raw, and it becomes that kind of silliness, doesn't it? Which is interesting, but to think of the two in comparison, to think of Lethal Weapon 3 and this one as the three that...
Well, I think the third in a trilogy, I have this theory, and this is a complete typo, the third in a trilogy is often where it gets softer.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it for a reason, because I think you can't maintain a level of sort of grittiness and intensity you do with often characters and it works. Sometimes it works better than others. But if you carry on that maintains that level of thing, it gets almost tedious because you're just this person, they're still just grumpy and angry about things, and it just doesn't work, So they have to heal, or they have to become something else. Last Crusade, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, or they say Lethal Weapon, Terminator 3, all those sort of. You see that there's a softening of the characters for a reason. They try to take them in a different direction. Because they're we've done a sequel. We can't do the same sequel again. We've got to do something different. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But I think it works in this one. The influence of this film, or the impact of this film, is kind of weirdly twofold. There is a film we were talking about doing and we've not been able to track down in this country. There's been no UK release of what is often just termed Super Cop 2. Which is the Michelle Yeoh spin-off. However, Eureka are doing a whole bunch. I've got them here. A whole bunch of sort of Girls and Guns, Michelle Yeoh's In Line of Duty. So if you do get around to it, that would be a fantastic one, because they obviously did. They also did all the Supercop films and the Project A films. So Eureka, get on that. So that's the first one. So it launched her. She's gone off and done a whole bunch of other things. Got forged her own career and stuff, and still very successful today. If anything, I'd say she has a renaissance in the last couple of years.
Yeah, thanks. So Everything Everywhere, wasn't it? And I watched Her Brother's Son, which she was in.
I haven't seen it yet.
Interesting show. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was in Discovery as well, Star Trek Discovery. So she's really sort of, I think, yeah, Renaissance and
still to come back on that, if rumors are to be believed, if they're still going to do the
Section
31
32, yeah, Section 32, 32 movie,
32,
yeah.
is that okay?
Is it the, I don't know, but yeah, that she's still got room for that, and she's done other things as well. She obviously she's now appeared in Marvel in Shang-Chi, so yeah, she's going strong and fantastically so. The other thing that sort of the other sort of is that although this didn't get a UK release, it is the film that, sorry, it didn't get a Western release, it is the film that sort of spurred Jackie Chan to try and do Hollywood again. So it wasn't straight away, but he did then go off and do Rumble in the Bronx and some other stuff and decided that he could give it another go. And I think it was because this is one of the few films he'd let go of the directing responsibilities. Yeah. And he took Stanley Tong with him and they went off and made Rumble in the Bronx. So it's, it you know, it's an important film for a couple of reasons, really.
Perhaps Tong's understanding of that kind of Western market that we see here was necessary for Chan to be able to break that. That's really interesting. Yeah, that
I think so. Yeah.
He could meld those two worlds together better than Chan ever could. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Chan is, from what I understand and sort of what you can see, I think he was never willing to kind of fully let go of control, because he's the one that, you know, like you say, he puts himself on the line. He's the one, he's the director, he's the producer and all this other stuff. Like, he's willing to do, it's his team that's doing all this other stuff.
Often sings the end credit song, you know, let's forget.
That's it. Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's... to him to sort of like let go of this sort of, you know, this franchise after directing two, and obviously then sort of formed a friendship with Stanley Tong. So, and then, you know, I think you say Stanley Tong's also a stunt director and stuntman himself, so they had that connection and bond. And so, yeah, he must have trusted him. And like you say, there's clearly that Western influence and stuff. So, and you get Rumble in the Bronx, which is really what launches Jackie Chan in the US. So,
again, I think probably my first Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah, I think not mine, but yeah, definitely an early one. I think it's one of those. I think. Well, I was late, but I think I saw Rush Hour.
Okay. Yeah.
And then was like, ooh, what else can I get my hands on? And that was, I saw Rumble in the Bronx sort of after that, really. I think I've seen a couple of those. So yeah, that, you know, so this film does have an influence. Although this wasn't seen, it definitely had an influence and resulted in that. But from our point of view, there is one more of this quadrology left of the original police story. First Strike, which I don't know if you've seen. We're not going to obviously work into it.
Nope, one I haven't seen.
Okay, good. It's good fun. I am kind of interested to see what you think of it. It's still the same character, but it's...
The front cover looks James Bondian. The DVD cover,
yeah, that's
has a James Bondian feel to it, as like a Pierce Brosnan era.
You're not far off.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, you're not far off. It has at least one classic, I would say, Jackie Chan fight scene, prop based fight scene, which is
good. Ace. Nice to see that come back.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we'll get back to that on the, you know, not in the next episode, but we'll get back to that one, because I think that's it then. That's we'll have done our sort of Jackie Chan. I'm really pleased we did this, because it's a really interesting sort of little quadrology of films. Weirdly, I've done this before Lethal Weapon, which I didn't think was happening, but I'm glad it did. Anyway, Jack, any final thoughts then for Police Story 3 Super Cop?
No, I don't think so. No, I think we've covered it all off. I think, well, maybe one more thing worth mentioning. Michelle Yeoh in her little green pantsuit by the pool. If ever there was a, you know, if ever there was any doubt before this point, which there wasn't because of how badass she was, like, she just looks, you know, like, you know, you have, in my head, I can think of, you know, Ursula Andress in the Coming Out the Sea.
Yeah.
Not just, but, you know, Keira Knightley in the green dress in Atonement. Like, Michelle Yeoh in that kind of outfit was like, wow, there's a movie star. So besides all the kind of ass kicking stuff she could do, like, she looks like a movie star there too.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I think that's a really good point. Just the charisma between the pairing of them that comes off the screen just is so confident in parts of this film.
Yeah, it's a completely different role, obviously, but, you know, we've we've been a little bit critical of Maggie Cheung at times, and I think she's not been done many favours by her character. And we know she goes on to be a very successful actress in her own right too. But there is just a spark. There's something special about Michelle Yeoh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, no, I agree. It's a good point to make there. Sort of, it's to why I can see why, because you know she went on, like, could have gone the other way. Yeah, because what was it? 1994 was Street Fighter movie, wasn't it? And obviously Ming-Na Wen plays Chun-Li. But I've always wondered, it's like, oh, was she ever considered for that? But I don't know. I have to think about it. Maybe I'll do. Maybe she saw the script and was like, no, I'm okay, thank you. I can see the writing on the wall with this one.
Feels like she sort of, in that same way we've been talking about Jackie Chan, she sort of owns her own kind of, she owns her presence and her own kind of identity. And I'm not finding the right word, but like, she knows who she wants to be. And perhaps, you know, that's playing a character in a big, silly movie. By the time she comes to Shang-Chi and these kind of movies, she's been who she's wanted to be for a long time. So,
yeah, there's like a brand, perhaps, isn't there? There's like a brand that she's looking to establish.
Perhaps that's part of it.
Maybe. I think, yeah, it's worth having a think about. Oh, yeah, it'd be interesting to see sort of, you know, I'm going to, as I dive into sort of the In the Line of Duty kind of series, I'll be interested to see how that goes. Anyway, yeah, no, I agree. This is a great film. We'll be wrapping up soon with First Strike. But for now, Jack, where can people find you and what you are doing?
Most active on X still, although that's not reactive at all. Still continuing with my Staith watch alongs, getting through his filmography. I've only got 10 left to go, which felt impossible at the start. Yes, of course. Yeah. This has been a great project. I really appreciated it because it taps nicely into my little niche of wanting to watch things through from in order from the start to the finish. And then Tony and I continue on Comics Emotions, Season's Greetings, and because I need a list, going through Brubaker and Phillips's complete run of noir comics as well.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, okay, wow. See, I've not read all of them.
I've probably hit about 60, maybe, you know, push 70. So I'm really glad I'm going to be able to finish that off because the quality continues to grow and get better. So if it gets better than where it's already got to that I've read up to, I don't know how.
I've read like two or three of them. Fatal was my favourite, but that was
amazing.
It lent into obviously the whole Lovecraftian kind of like weirdness as well. So
yeah, Fatal is great, and Fade Out is fantastic too. If you haven't read that, I recommend.
No,
that.
I haven't yet. I'll have to try that one out. Okay, but anyway, there you go. But yeah, people go find him. So I am Jack's Musings as well, obviously on Twitter. I guess it, and all of your letterbox reviews.
Thank you for promoting me because I'm crap at doing that for myself.
That's good. Like I say, I like your reviews. You've inspired me. You do your watch alongs, and I'm currently doing the flop watch, which is films that flopped that I kind of liked, and we're going back and saying, did they really? So far, done Max Payne and Hitman from 2007. So we've got a few more to sort of, I'm going to be diving into.
Yeah, it's great. I'm going to read along.
Yeah. It's good fun. Anyway, yeah, we can find us at 20th Century Geek on all the social medias. We are doing stuff we've just done. Mike came on for the last episode to talk about June 1984 and June Part 1. So just getting you ready for June Part 2. And, you know, what he thinks on that. We've also been doing this and we're finishing out the Jackie Chan series. And soon, Tony will be back to talk about The Thing in all its iterations. So excited for that. So doing some reading and watching 50s sci-fi horror. So that'd be good fun. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you, Jack, for coming back on.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you much. We shall see you on the next episode.